This talk was given by Jeffrey Shugen Arnold Roshi at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugen Roshi is the abbot of the monastery and the Zen Center of New York City. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or to find out more about our retreats and residency programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
This is from the early teachings of the Buddha. The bhikkhuni Upalavana stood at the foot of a sala tree in full flower. Then Mara, the evil one, desiring to arouse fear, trepidation, and terror in her, desiring to make her fall away from her concentration, approached her and said, "Having gone to a sala tree with flowering top, you stand at its foot all alone, bhikkhuni. There is none whose beauty can rival your own. Foolish girl, have you no fear of rogues?" Then it occurred to Upalavana, "Now who is this? This is Mara, the evil one, desiring to make me fall away from concentration." And then she replied to him in verse, "Though 100,000 rogues just like you might come here, I stir not a hair, I feel no terror. Even alone, Mara, I don't fear you. I can make myself disappear, or I can enter inside your belly. I can stand between your eyebrows, yet you won't catch a glimpse of me. I am the master of my own mind. The bases of power are well developed. I am freed from every kind of bondage. Therefore, I don't fear you, friend." Then Mara, the evil one, realizing the bhikkhuni Upalavana knows me, was sad and disappointed, and right there disappeared. So I wanted to talk a little bit about courage. Of all the many things we might imagine coming into practicing the Dharma, we may not think about courage as being something that we'll need to draw upon. And yet it's there in the teachings, really, from the beginning. A sutra like this, an encounter like this, the teachings, the Buddha's own story of encountering fear, dread, terror, and how he practiced those arisings. And so I wanted to do this in two parts, today and on Saturday. So often when it's spoken about in the teachings, it's spoken of as fearlessness, to be without fear, which is also to be fearless within fear. You know, because we are dualistic mind, we tend to think in absolute, so we're either completely lacking in fear or we're afraid. And all of the things that we encounter, the obstacles, what we think of as obstacles, as well as all of the virtues that we're developing, you know, don't exist as absolutes, aren't practiced as absolutes. And so within the heart of anger, we can be practicing compassion. Within stinginess, we can practice generosity. Within impatience, we can practice patience. And some of the most important moments in our journey are moments like that. And really, because all attachments are based in fear, every form of grasping is based in anxiety, we must have courage. As long as we have attachments, we must have courage. So the sincere practitioner should get acquainted both with fear and with courage. In the Tibetan Buddhist tradition, there's teachings about being free of fear and hope. Hope is to have an expectation of something in the future, that something, someone is going to fulfill our desires, is going to bring us satisfaction, is going to save us. And fear we might think of as to be afraid of something in the future, to be afraid of something in the future, to be ill at ease about some possible possibility. The word courage, the heart, the source of it, or the beginnings of it, are based in the heart, the seat of emotions. And so one's spirit, temperament, a state or a frame of mind, a being, is the origins of courage. Our innermost state, a kind of temper, state of being, our inner strength. And the Buddha said that in facing what is true, we will be frightened. And I think that, you know, in the beginning, you know, why would that be? We just think, well, you know, I'm tired of delusion. I want to realize what's true. So why would I be afraid of that? Well, another way of asking that is, why are we so fond of our attachments? Those things which are based in non-truths, those things which create suffering. Why are we so enchanted with our attachments? Why is it so difficult to let go? So the Buddha said, we will need to develop courage to face what is true. As far as I can tell, pretty much on every level. To face what is here and now with courage, with heart, with inner strength. So Upalavana said to Mara, I feel no terror. I don't fear you. One could only be without terror at such a moment by having walked the path of courage and fear, having experienced fear many times and become deeply acquainted, deeply familiar with it. And so she says, I know you. And at the moment that Mara realizes that Upalavana knows her, he is sad, and disappointed, and disappears. She's realized that Mara, fear, is not apart from mind. And so courage is a tremendous virtue, a tremendous source of strength and power and stability. And so in practice, the qualities of forbearance, of patience, of perseverance, of faith, all of these are both endowed with and strengthened by courage. It's a great virtue in practice and realization. It's a essential in the path of non-attachment. It's just essential in life, because life is constantly encountering the unknown. And in particular, in our work of undoing racism, all forms of bias, of meeting the climate emergency of our time, courage is necessary. You might remember when Eric Holder, the Attorney General, first term of Obama, gave his first address to the judicial system, workers in the Department of Justice. And he said, he began by saying, we're a nation of cowards. He said, we're a nation of cowards. And you could probably still look at this on YouTube. It was one of the early, 2008, yeah, it was probably one of the early-ish subjects that we used for one of the early Beyond Fear of Differences meeting in the city. He said, we're a nation of cowards because we have this tremendously deep and broad history of racism in this country. We don't talk about it. The country, we as a country, we don't talk about it. We're afraid to talk about it. I remember hearing that in the news and thinking, it was good knowing you, Attorney General Eric Holder. I mean, I thought he would be out of there. And fortunately, he wasn't out of there. I thought, what courage he demonstrated to say such a thing at such an early moment in his term. And courage is also one of the 10 values, or I'm thinking of them as principles, 10 principles that we, the Beyond Fear of Differences group, came up with. And we speak of it this way. Courage is the ability to step forward, to be vulnerable, to tolerate discomfort, and to hold space for new ideas. And so that's really what I want to talk about, sort of, is courage framed in this way. And another way of, and that one of the reasons I want to talk about these values or principles is to see how they're so essential for the work of undoing racism, essential for meeting the urgency of our earth and life on it, and also for practice, that these are all, they all work together, that these principles could just as well be, and really are, functioning principles for how to practice. And another way of thinking of, what's the other side of courage? And so we could think of being discouraged, to be deprived of courage, to lose our heart, to be disheartened. And so the ability to step forward, the ability to step forward in the presence of fear, in the presence of something that we would rather, in the presence of which we would rather not step forward. We would rather turn away. And we have done that many, many times, all of us. We have turned away. And there are, the genius of human consciousness is there are so many ways to do everything. There are so many ways, in essence, to create suffering, but to attach, to turn away, to grasp. And so really practice is becoming deeply acquainted with all of those different ways we employ to step forward. Master Dogen says, one who does not step forward cannot accept the Buddha's teaching. If you are unbending, you cannot stop floating along in the endless cycles of birth and death. And another fascicle, he says, by bowing formally, when I think of that as with the whole body and mind, by bowing formally and stepping inward, you stumble into the realm of great ease. I love that. By bowing with the whole body and mind and stepping inward, you stumble into great ease. So, of course, to step forward, we have to leave the place of our abiding. It's like giving. In order to give, we have to let go of what we have to offer, to leave the place of our abiding, of our dwelling, of our clinging. Or at other times, to step forward in courage in the presence of fear may mean to stay right where we are. Stepping forward is to not move. You know, that early sutra of the Buddha's called Fear and Dread, in which he talks about being in the woods at night and being frightened by all the sounds he was hearing, which was not was potentially dangerous because there were creatures in the woods that were dangerous. But he was working with his fear, and so he decided, experimenting, he decided that whatever of the four postures, sitting, standing, walking, lying down, that he was in the moment when fear arose, he would maintain that posture. He would not move away from that posture. So if he was walking when the fear arose, he would continue walking. If he was sitting, he would continue sitting. So his way of stepping forward was to maintain that place, in a sense, let go into that place, into that fear, until the fear subsided. And only then would he take another posture. And so what stepping forward means is something that we have to discover again and again. But in essence, it's to seek what is not known when we encounter fear, to seek what we don't yet understand about fear, to seek understanding about what we don't yet know about that which we're afraid of, which is really the path of the ancestors, which is really leaping, breaking free of the cycle of samsara. We have to bend. We have to bend. If we do not bend, we'll not stop floating in the cycle of birth and death. Every traveler has to leave home in order to find their way home. As I was working on this, I was studying, and I came across the teaching of the four mental attitudes, which worked together kind of nicely with these four aspects of courage. So the first of these four mental attitudes, and these are mental attitudes that are important in practicing, in the way. And the first of them is conviction, and so, or faith. We might think of it as faith. So in stepping forward, this courage is being able to step forward. We have to have faith. We have to have conviction. And faith in Buddhism is always faith in the three treasures, in the Buddha, which is in essence his enlightenment. You know, think about it. If we don't actually have faith in the enlightenment of the Buddha, I mean, then there's not much left, right? Because everything, all of the teachings, all of the practice, all of the skillful means, everything we understand as Buddhism arose out of his enlightenment and the enlightenment of all enlightened beings. So to have faith in enlightenment, the Buddha's enlightenment, is essential. To have faith in then the Dharma, the teachings, and the real nature of all things, to have faith in the Sangha, in the basic goodness of the Sangha, in the shared aspiration of the Sangha, in the power of the Sangha to teach you and me. So faith is having conviction in our own Buddha nature, in our capacity, in your ability. And so this mental attitude of faith allows us to step forward, right? Because otherwise, I mean, we're stepping forward within a faith that we can do that, that we need to do that, we should do that, that there is strength in our stepping forward. And so within that, there is conviction. So we could also think of, well, what is not having faith? When we don't have faith, we have doubt. We have distrust. We hesitate. It's very difficult to step forward. It's difficult to bend. Right? And our lack of faith can become very rigid. Right? Faith, too, can become rigid when it's no longer faith, when it becomes something else. Everything free, everything that is fundamentally liberated becomes rigid when it's no longer true, which happens with our attachments. And so not having faith, in a sense, leads us to discouragement. Having faith is to have courage. Not having faith is to lose that heart, that inner strength. And all of the aspects of not having faith are binding. You know, when we don't have faith in others, then it's very isolating. Right? We have no help, we have no support, we have no guides, we have nothing to learn, no one has anything to offer. The world becomes a very suspicious place, a threatening place. When we don't have faith in ourselves, then we turn away from our essential nature, our ability, our capacity, our own wisdom. It makes us very susceptible to others also, to others' beliefs, opinions, agendas. When we experience others as not trustworthy, in a sense, when we experience how others have lost faith, have lost their heart, have lost their courage, it can be difficult to have faith ourselves, particularly if out of that lack of courage, lack of heart, people, when they act out of that anger, that greed, that delusion, and cause harm. But when we lose that faith, we turn away from everything essential. We turn away from what is true. We turn away from what we need to take refuge in. And in turning away, that just means we're turning towards something else. And so in a sense, we always have faith. It's just, what do we have faith in? And so we might have faith in our skepticism or cynicism, in our frustration, in our doubt or our anger, our impatience. And so we study the mind. We study the mind. We study the nature of impermanence. We study cause and effect. And by study, I mean the Buddha meant, Buddhism means actually study, not just casually notice now and then, but really closely, deeply study. We study the arising of all phenomena due to karma and their conditions. That all things arise in this way. That this is an immutable truth, a law of nature. What does that mean? In the Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life, Shantideva, in the chapter on Patience Paramita, is talking about anger arising, because anger in Buddhism is one of the principal ways in which we develop patience. And oftentimes it's presented as when others are angry at us, when we're experiencing others' anger, that those are essential moments in which we have the opportunity to develop patience, right? Because it's very easy to lose patience, to be impatient, and to respond to anger with anger, to respond to judgment with judgment, to respond to a loss of faith with a loss of faith. Shantideva says, just as a sharp pain arises, although you don't desire it, so too anger arises, although you're not desiring for it to arise. Just as a loss of courage, a loss of faith, a loss of heart arises, we're not wanting that to happen, but there it is. He says, a person doesn't intentionally become angry thinking, I will get angry now. Nor does anger itself arise thinking, I am now going to arise. All offenses and vices of various kinds arise under the influence of conditions. They do not arise independently. Why is this important? They don't arise on their own. They don't arise just because I desired them to arise. That's not how it usually works. They don't arise on their own. Anger doesn't have its own mind, its own consciousness, its own agency. And yet there it is. And Shantideva says, thus, everything is dependent, mutually arising, codependent. Everything is dependent on something else. And even that on which something is dependent is not autonomous, is itself dependent. Everything that we see, everything we can touch, everything we experience arises in this way through what sort of the shorthand is causes and conditions, karmic streams, intentional actions and their consequences, and then the conditions in which those circumstances are taking place, the conditions that are necessary for us to experience them, consciousness, senses. And he says, because of this, why do we get angry at things that arise like apparitions? So he's saying all things arise from karma and conditions, thoughts, beliefs, words, actions of ourselves, of others. And most anger arises without the desire to get angry. Sometimes people want to get angry, but very often it just arises. But even if we are wanting to get angry, that too is arising because of karmic causes and conditions. So Shantideva is saying, don't be angry at the anger. Don't be angry at the person, at their words and actions. All of those arise out of conditions. In other words, where do we direct? And this is true for those, for when we have experienced pain and suffering, hurt and anger. This is true when we cause pain and suffering. And this is why so many of the great spiritual teachers and leaders have taught and lived a life of meeting anger and hatred with love and compassion. For the Buddha, and each in their own way has their own understanding of that. So it's both a universal spiritual path and virtue that is grounded or rises from each person's respective tradition, how it's understood, in a sense its source, if you will. For the Buddha realized that all dharmas are forms of emptiness. They're not born, they're not destroyed, They're not real and they're not unreal. This is another way of saying what Shantideva was saying. Anger is not born or destroyed. It is not autonomous. It doesn't have its own ownness. It only arises just as we do in each moment. Just as every perception, every sensation, every action arises in each moment through a complex web of causes and conditions. None of which have permanence, none of which have fixedness, none of which have self. And so when we're afraid, when we're angry, when we're fearful, what do we direct it towards? We begin with our own body and mind, to study the mind, to study the mind that appears in silence, in breath, in sensation, in thought, in emotion, in judgment, and try to see into directly. And so, as is true with everything, you know, since the Dharma is a lifetime of studying, all dharmas are forms of emptiness. All emptiness appears as dharmas. And so, all of training is really just examining all dharmas, which means in the beginning we have to see, we have to begin to recognize how when one dharma arises, a phenomena, a sensation, a thought, an emotion, a thing, we have to begin to see how we're not seeing it. That when it arises, the degree to which we don't see it, but instead see our projections, our expectations, our history, our socialization, our desires. And then as those fall away, more and more we see just the object. Right? There's still self and other. The object still appears, abides, and then disappears. But now it's more on a plane. And then we see further and see that it is not as it appears. We see its basic nature, empty of form, empty of self, empty of birth and death. And then we see how it's not apart from form, it's not apart from life and death. And so we could say the same thing about all of these qualities, courage, for instance, faith, perseverance. These aspects of human nature, these qualities that we bring forth or that we struggle with, that throughout all of our training, we will continually be coming back again and again to these aspects and studying them and seeing them more deeply and seeing them more clearly. And so we begin with our own body and mind. And then we extend that to phenomena, to people we care about, to acquaintances, to strangers, to enemies. We study courage. We study fear. We study discouragement, aversion, anger, hatred. As we move through these, in a sense, these various fields of our world that we live in, these concentric circles in which we have certain, you know, clusters of people and things and creatures and memories. And so we have those that we hold very close to us, that we identify with, hold very dear, and then those that are, you know, they're invited to the party, but they don't get to sit next to you at dinner, right? So there's a little further extension, and then strangers, and then enemies. Courage is the ability to step forward, to be vulnerable. You know, we talk a lot about being vulnerable. The root is to be wounded, to be hurt. You know, so there's a reason why, you know, from an etymological perspective, of why we don't want to be vulnerable. The root meaning is to be injured, to be hurt. We don't want to be hurt, so we don't make ourselves vulnerable. But the vulnerability that is needed here is to have the courage to to become defensiveless, to let go, to let dissolve the walls of the mind that protect the sense of self. And our fear, is, we can think of as a reluctance to be vulnerable. You know, Brené Brown says that vulnerability is the quality that we so respond to in others. You know, when people are vulnerable, they open themselves up, they, you know, they're tender, how we, you know, we respond to that. It's incredibly inspiring and moving. It brings us closer. But we ourselves don't want to be vulnerable. We don't want to be hurt. And so the you know, to take their chance, to risk, in a sense, injuring our sense of self, our pride, our self-esteem, the way we want, like to think of ourselves, the way we want other people to think of us. And it's just like seeing something across the field. When it, you know, you're looking across the field, you see something, but it's hard to see it clearly. As you move closer to it, or it moves closer to you, you see it more clearly. And so all of the ways in which we keep ourselves not vulnerable, to not see, to not be seen. And so courage is to be vulnerable, to, in a sense, put ourselves at risk to be seen. And so we draw upon our heart, the heart that wants to be, to have life, that actually wants intimacy, that wants true strength. And so we have to let go, to step forward. We have to bend. We have to release that which binds, let down that which we hold up. And ultimately to realize the emptiness of body and mind, of characteristics, of qualities, of deficiencies, of virtues. Because we can hang our hat on anything. You know, we can hang our hat on our deficiencies. We can hang our hat on our virtues. And so to have courage in this way, to step forward, to be vulnerable, I think of playing within inner and outer samadhi. That to sit on this seat of awakening, to sit on the diamond seat, is to develop the stability, the strength, the confidence that already exists within us, that is our very nature, that arises naturally when we stop turning away. Stop turning away. And so it is that we can experience great strength and stability and confidence even in a moment of inner turmoil. Usually not in the beginning, right? We get thrown off. We get thrown off our seat. That's what Mata was trying to do with Upalavana. Throw her off. Make her lose her concentration. Get her off of her seat of awakening. That's always Mara's intention. In all of the sutras, that's always what Mara's trying to do. To disrupt, to interrupt, to break one's path. And so as we develop our mindfulness, as we develop our samadhi, we're developing the capacity to have courage, right? Because the only way we can develop mindfulness and concentration, samadhi, is by having encountered a multitude of frights, a multitude of offenses, a multitude of threats. And so Upalavana says, "You won't catch a glimpse of me. I am the master of my mind. I am the master of my mind. You, Mara, I see you, but I will not follow." Dogen says, when you refrain from unwholesome action, the power of practice is immediately actualized. This is actualized on the scale of the entire earth, the entire universe, all time, all dharmas. Whole body and mind. The power of the whole universe. And so in order to do this, we have to accept everything. We have to accept everything. And so hearing that, we begin to compile the list of all the things we shouldn't accept, right? I'll accept everything but this and this and this, because this sucks, this is wrong, this is crazy. And oftentimes you're right, right? This sucks, this is wrong, this is crazy. Right, and so onward we cycle. through the world that sucks, is mad, and never ends. And so to accept is, in a sense, the key to that seat that you sit on. I mean, think about it. When we turn away, what is that? Not accepting. Nope. 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 No. 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 To accept. And by saying, well, I'm accepting this, this is what I'm accepting. No. Because that's not true. That is not what has arisen through causes and conditions. I mean, it has. The causes and conditions are that of not accepting. That's the path we're developing. To accept ourselves and others and the world. And from that seat of power, step forward. And that is a place of power. To step forward and be vulnerable. Dogen says, when you move mountains, rivers, and the earth, and the sun, the moon, and the stars to practice, when you move the universe to practice, when the universe is practicing with you, they in return move you to practice. And so the second of the four mental attitudes is inclination or intention. Why should we be vulnerable? Why? Why take that chance? Why risk having been hurt before? Why take that chance again? Why not just protect? There must be an intention firmly established. We call it bodhicitta. The intention to reclaim our lives. The intention to know our mind and the minds of others. The intention to not create more pain, more confusion. That has the strength to give rise to vulnerability. Because what we begin to see is we've been vulnerable all along, but vulnerable not within our strength. And we have to be vulnerable in establishing our intention, because what we're really saying is, this matters. I care. I'm committing to this. Which means we have to be unconcerned with success and failure. Oh, Lordy. What does that mean? Right? It can sound like it just means just take a deck of cards, throw them up in the air, and hope that they settle in the form of a palace. Wendell Berry says, we don't have the right to ask whether we are going to succeed or not. You don't have the right to ask that question. When you ask that question, you are stopped. You are stopped. And we do not have the right to stop, is what he's saying. He said, the only question we have the right to ask is, what's the right thing to do? That's the question. He makes it very simple for us. What's the right thing to do? He's speaking about the earth emergency, so he says, what does the earth require of us? That's the question we need to ask. What does freeing ourselves from the deep and painful and binding vice of racism and sexism, what does that require? How do I free myself from samsara? What does that require? Those are the questions we have the right to ask. What does profound letting go, profound trust, profound faith require? Those are the things I want to be cultivating. Those are the questions I should be asking. What is required to truly bring forth compassion? To be unconcerned doesn't mean to be reckless or indifferent. Right? Because part of a bodhisattva's work is to be smart about it. Right? To be smart about it. To be doing things that will actually bring about that which we need to do. It just means not being attached to success or failure. And so as we wholeheartedly step forward, make ourselves vulnerable, have courage in the presence of fear, we may or may not see the change we'd like to see. We may not see that. We may not see the good results that we would like. But we just keep asking, am I doing the right thing? It's the three pure precepts. It's upaya. It's liberating to be guided by that question and to be freed of success and failures, to be liberated. So all of this arises from great compassion, from the deep examination of Bodhi. So Dogen said, moved by what is spoken and heard, unsurpassable enlightenment, we vow to refrain from unwholesome action and practice refraining from unwholesome action. Moved by what is spoken and heard, moved by having encountered the Dharma, we vow to do the right thing, to do what must be done. It's the only thing. We could say it's the only thing that makes sense, but it is the only thing. Everything else becomes foolish. That doesn't mean we don't do it. But increasingly, we see how at cross purposes we are with ourselves, how at cross purposes we are with things. You know, I was thinking about how the history of the world is filled with demons and malicious spirits, Mara. You know, all of the personifications, the embodiments of all of those things that are thwarting all that is good. Well, we have come up squarely against ourselves. This is the gift of the 21st century. We have come up against ourselves, and there is nowhere else to go. From the point of view of practice, hallelujah. It's from this place that we can step forward. So, to be continued.
Thanks so much for listening. For meditation supplies such as cushions, incense, liturgical instruments, Dharma books, and more, visit monasterystore.org. Support for your spiritual practice at home.